Radio EcoShock.
We were told the big ozone hole over Antarctica was healing to recover by 2066 or even 2045. By 2019, the hole was shrinking. New science questions all that. Potential drivers of the recent large Antarctic ozone holes was a paper published November 22, 2023. The results bear on the safety of geoengineering, too. Hannah Kasenich is the lead author. She is a PhD student at the University of Otago in New Zealand. After winning an AI-related scholarship from Australia, Kasenich and her colleagues broke the long-standing story of ozone. From South Island, New Zealand, Hannah Kasenich, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so just to be clear, there is no hole in the atmosphere. Ozone, a triple form of oxygen, is spread pretty thinly in the upper atmosphere as it is. What is the ozone hole, really?
So I think we'll start by talking about what the ozone layer is in general. So the best analogy to picture the ozone layer is like a duvet blanket where we have an area of peak concentration high up in the atmosphere, around 30 kilometers. So this is in the stratosphere. And this blanket shields us from UV radiation. It absorbs that radiation and stops it from reaching the surface. And so we need a thick enough blanket of ozone in order to effectively shield us from UV. And what happens during the formation of the ozone hole is this blanket gets thinner, usually from underneath in the lower stratosphere, within what's called the polar vortex over Antarctica.
And how does the ozone hole in this Antarctic spring look, and how would that compare to its first noticed appearance in 1979?
So most ozone holes follow a very similar evolution throughout the spring. So the ozone hole doesn't exist year-round. It forms after each southern hemisphere winter. So what happens is during the southern hemisphere winter, we have a circulation pattern called the polar vortex, which gets much stronger and circles Antarctica in the stratosphere. This vortex of air contains a pocket of air within it, which it kind of isolates from the rest of the atmosphere. And this pocket of air gets very cold. During the winter, we have no more sunlight reaching the pole. Within that isolated pocket, due to the low temperatures, we have what's called polar stratospheric clouds that form. And they're quite icy and kind of unique clouds that are pretty unique to this pocket of air. So on the surface of those clouds, CFCs get released into more destructive forms. And when you have sunlight returning to the pole in early spring, so mid-August, that starts a chain reaction with those chlorine chemicals where they deplete ozone pretty rapidly in the lower stratosphere. So almost every year around August, September, we start to see that depletion occurring and thinning this ozone blanket from the underneath. And that ramps up through September and peaks around the month of October. And then we start to see this hole close. And part of the reason that it's closing around this time is due to the polar vortex that contains the ozone hole and largely defines its extent, begins to become less stable. Once the pole warms, you don't have as much of a temperature gradient, which doesn't reinforce that circulation pattern as much. So by November, we see much more ozone over the pole. The vortex usually breaks up, air remixes, and you have the return to a normal ozone layer.
So in general terms, why is a larger ozone hole over Antarctica a cause for worry?
We care about the area of the ozone hole, but we also really care about the depth. So one thing that our study looked at in particular was the depth of the ozone hole at the center. When you have a more extreme thinning of that blanket that protects us from UV, you end up with more UV reaching the surface. In particular, if we think about the month of October versus September, the angle of the sun in the sky is higher later in the spring. So if you have a deeper hole in October, you end up with more UV at the surface. But perhaps more importantly, if you have less ozone for any time over this region in Antarctica, we aren't absorbing UV light as much in that layer over that time. And so that's a big shift in where heat is stored in the atmosphere. What that does is it influences circulation patterns across the entire southern hemisphere. So we see a shift of the circulation belts in the southern hemisphere towards the pole. we get pushed more towards a positive phase of the southern annular mode, also known as the SAM. And so that influences precipitation patterns, temperature patterns, more extreme weather events across the southern hemisphere. And so as far as human effects, those climate and weather effects of the ozone hole are more important than the effects from the UV changes.
So this could impact Australia, New Zealand, where you live, but also, I guess, the southern tip of Africa and a lot of South America. Big changes just because of changes in the ozone coverage. So your study's about Antarctica only in one part of the stratosphere, just for 3 or 4 months. Is that going to be relevant to the overall expectations for ozone recovery?
So when scientists assess the timeline of ozone recovery, it's usually broken into three different regions. So one region is the region that we looked at, which is the ozone hole specifically. Even with reduced CFCs, you'll have this polar vortex form. You'll see cold temperatures, lack of sunlight within the polar vortex during the winter. We'll have a little bit less ozone. And then when sunlight returns, usually that ozone will recover. For now, we have extra CFCs that are making things worse and potentially some other effects. And that's what we consider the Antarctic ozone hole. And the timeline for that is projected towards 2065 for recovery. And I don't know if our findings will necessarily change that. That's kind of the next phase of our work. The other region that we look at in terms of recovery is the Arctic ozone hole, which does form in a similar way. So we still have a polar vortex in the northern hemisphere over the pole. You get the unleashing of CFCs into more destructive forms, which deplete ozone in the lower stratosphere. But that vortex is much less stable, so we don't see a consistent hole. And the timeline for recovery of that region is a little bit sooner. And then overall, the third region is just thinning of the general ozone layer. And that's global, and that's more of a less extreme version of ozone destruction. But that destruction is located where people live. So people don't really live in Antarctica or on the North Pole, and that ozone depletion doesn't really affect them directly due to UV. But the rest of the atmosphere still does have destruction due to CFCs, and that's still on track to recover as well.
Although I did find some signs that we should continue to worry about low ozone, in 2018 I talked with Dr. William Ball, then with ETH Zurich. His paper, Evidence for a Continuous Decline in Lower Stratospheric Ozone, Offsetting Ozone Layer Recovery, it was cautionary. And despite public assurances the ozone problem is solved, a stream of new papers continue to ask difficult questions. Hannah, what got you working on this problem?
Well, for starters, I did read his paper, which I found very interesting because of that separation in different atmospheric layers of recovery and then a lack of recovery. And that is partly what prompted us to look at these vertically resolved observations. But even before that, when I began my PhD, it was around 2022, early mid-year, and we had just had the 2020 ozone hole and the 2021 ozone hole, which were notably large and deep. And this was a time where people had been assessing the recovery metrics of the ozone hole through 2018, 2019, and seeing that there were signs of recovery. And now we had two more years of low total column ozone values. And so I was interested in seeing what would happen if you added those years to previous analyses that other researchers had performed. And then while that was happening, we ended up doing this analysis during the spring of 2022, which also had another large ozone hole. So now that we have three large holes to add on to this trend, I started seeing some interesting patterns just in total column ozone, which spurred me to look more in detail, more three-dimensional at the whole picture.
Yes, you sort of break things down into the chemicals, which humans have emitted, which have direct impacts, and then there's other natural variable cycles that are playing around here. And the ozone breakers are the halogenated chemicals like CFCs, but many other chlorinated chemicals as well. Have these declined significantly in the upper atmosphere?
So other researchers have looked at the CFCs in the atmosphere and whether they are in fact declining. So I believe the latest status is that things are in fact declining, but there have been the release of a couple new CFCs over the past few years that we are seeing signs of in the atmosphere. So while we're declining, that will take a long, long time for the CFCs to actually leave the atmosphere. And we need to make sure that we are monitoring any new release of CFCs so that we stay on track.
And so your team looks beyond CFCs, though, for other drivers of ozone depletion. And let's look at a couple. And starting with wildfires here in Canada, our north practically burned down this year. We've seen huge, never-before-seen wildfires. What does that have to do with damaging our ozone shield?
Yeah, so that's been a major topic with the recent large ozone holes we've had over the last few years, because we have had extreme wildfires and volcanic eruptions. What those do is they inject particles into the atmosphere, which make the stratospheric clouds inside the polar vortex more prominent. So we're giving more kind of seeds for those polar stratospheric clouds, which allow the increased release of CFCs into destructive forms. So that's a big impact that affects the rate of the CFC destruction of ozone, particularly in early spring and lower in the stratosphere. And so likely that was a major contributor to some of our large ozone holes of recent years. And that's something that we are looking at. Interestingly, the region that we identify in October to have a significant decline in ozone, not just an anomalous amount of ozone destruction, that potentially is higher in the stratosphere than where the majority of the CFC destruction of ozone traditionally occurs due to the worsened wildfires and volcanic effects. And because it's a bit higher up, we started looking at what else interacts with that region. And that's where we see a descent of mesospheric air entering the polar vortex, intersecting with this region where we see declines. And so that's one of the major new links that we found in our paper.
Yeah, I should mention the fires in Northwest Australia are pretty amazing right about now. You report that wildfire smoke can damage stratospheric ozone. Well, so can low ozone lead to a higher fire risk in Australia or South America? And if so, does that make a kind of self-reinforcing circle of low ozone fires and lower ozone?
Well, certainly everything is related, and that's one of the tricky things about studying something like this. Everything will have an effect on other parts of the atmosphere and the climate. And we do see that you might have in more intense dry summers in parts of New Zealand and Australia, which might increase the risk of wildfires. And so that could be a reinforcing cycle. It's probably not the major contributor to some of the kind of long-term trends of ozone, but that's something to keep an eye on.
Okay, so unless we're scientists, another driver in your new paper is kind of hard to imagine. Low ozone levels in Antarctica change polar winds, or is it that the winds change the ozone? What is happening with the southern polar vortex and ozone?
When you have increased ozone destruction within the polar vortex, typically that ends up cooling the air inside of the polar vortex because the ozone heats up the atmosphere as it absorbs UV light. So when you have cooler temperatures within and warmer temperatures outside of the vortex, you end up with a stronger vortex, which also reinforces ozone depletion within it. So that is another feedback mechanism per se. So that's one thing. And then the mechanism that we identify in our paper as potentially related to these declines is a region of air that descends into the center of this kind of calm pocket of air within the polar vortex from the mesosphere, so above the pole, and it descends into the center of the polar vortex and meets up with the bulk of the ozone layer around the September-October timeline.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You're listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Hannah Kasenich with new research on the continuing ozone holes over Antarctica. It's been a little hard to get to the public the relationships between climate change and the protective ozone layer because they're not a direct one-on-one thing. What else can you tell us about those relationships?
So I think one of the things to know about ozone in reference to some of the other greenhouse gas increases and other elements of climate change is that it is a separate phenomena, but it in some ways interacts. So it even counteracts some of the effects of greenhouse gas increases. And so it's really important to study them independently, but then also assess how those things will influence each other into the future. So if we think back at the timeline of recovery of the Antarctic ozone hole in 2065, that's 40 years into a changing climate. And we have all these other potential changes that we expect to happen in the climate during that time. And so we need to make sure that we understand the drivers of ozone holes today so that we can see how they interact in the changing climate. Potentially, some of their effects will be amplified, and potentially some of these effects will become unimportant in our future climate. But that's something that we have to make sure that we study in order to know when we actually will see full recovery.
Is it possible the South Polar ozone hole could extend over New Zealand, endangering plants, animals, and people there?
Most of the time, the extent of the hole is controlled by the polar vortex. So we don't actually see that vortex grow in area for the most part. But what it does is it's quite dynamic, and it almost swings around as it circles above Antarctica. And there are periods where it could potentially be uncovering this ozone hole over the tip of South America or New Zealand, and I guess Australia as well, but that would be less likely. And those are very short-lived events and very rare events, and likely we won't see a more frequent occurrence of these. So that's good news. What we really do care about is within the polar vortex, what's going on in terms of the depth of the ozone hole.
It looks like 2023 will be the hottest year ever. Does that change anything about ozone in the upper atmosphere where you're studying it?
So we still are not sure what precedes a large ozone hole. Of course, we do have the effects of worsened wildfires, certainly. So if that happens early on in 2023, that could be something to look at for the ozone hole next year. And then if we get more information on some of the precursors, looking at maybe temperature and wind patterns going into the southern hemisphere winter, we might be able to predict better what the 2024 ozone hole will be like. But overall, an increase in temperature globally, I don't believe has a direct effect over the formation of the ozone hole.
And we've been talking about aerosols and, you know, the dust and industrial particles and wildfire smoke, the pollution from human activity. It usually stays in the lower band of the atmosphere, in the troposphere, but there are growing calls to inject particles like sulfates higher up into the stratosphere. It is geoengineering to cool the planet. Does your study say anything about unplanned risks of solar radiation management with aerosols?
So this is something that researchers have looked in and is noted in the World Meteorological Organization report of the status of the ozone layer. So it's not an area that I study, but it's kind of similar to the wildfire and volcanic effects. Anything inserted into the stratosphere that has the potential to seed more polar stratospheric clouds has the capability of worsening CFC-induced ozone depletion. So when we look at any kind of interference, we need to make sure that we study its effects on all elements of the planet, including ozone.
Ozone depletion over Antarctica has bumped up and down during the last decade. Hannah, what do you expect as we roll up to 2030 and then 2040? Can we even predict where the ozone hole is going?
Well, with such a short time series so far, it's really hard to predict whether what we're seeing today and over the last 4 years is part of a long-term trend or just kind of unfortunate statistical variation where we've had unusually low ozone values over the last 4 years, but those will begin more of a positive trajectory. So that's something to keep watching. I also wanted to note one of the years that we used during our analysis, 2019, was an abnormal year. And a lot of researchers in this field tend to exclude that year from their trends. Just to touch on the reasons for that and potentially if this similar situation occurs in the future, why that might not indicate direct recovery. So what happened in 2019 is we had a sudden stratospheric warming. And what that does is it breaks up the polar vortex early And as I talked about earlier, the polar vortex is really the vessel that contains the ozone hole. And if that vortex breaks up early due to external effects, we aren't able to see what would have happened to the depth of the ozone layer within the polar vortex later in the spring. And so we might see more of those effects on other years in the future. And hopefully we'll see clear, deeper, and smaller ozone holes in a stable vortex as well in the future. So for me, from looking at future years, if we see a year where we do still have a polar vortex that remains intact, but within that vortex, we have less destruction and earlier closing of the ozone hole, that would be something that I would say is a really good indication of recovery.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners, like what you're working on next?
So the next phase of our work is to dive into what exactly is going on with the mesospheric descent into the center of the ozone hole, and whether that is something that is more of a byproduct of worsened ozone depletion earlier in the spring, or if that is more of a direct contributor to the mid-spring evolution of the ozone hole. So we see that it correlates well with ozone values in October, but if this is something that is largely driving ozone depletion, we need to understand it, and we need to understand what its effect will be like in our changing climate.
The paper, Potential Drivers of the Recent Large Antarctic Ozone Holes, was published in Nature Communications. It's open access, listeners, so you can read it yourself. Published November 21st from Dunedin, New Zealand. We've been speaking with lead author Hannah Kasenich. Find links and more notes to follow up in my show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Hannah, this is great work. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks so much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org.